Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's the Opperman Report. And now, here is investigator Ed Opperman.
Okay, welcome to the Opperman Report. I'm your host, private investigator Ed Opperman. You could find me at Opperman Investigations and Digital Forensic Consulting through my website, emailrevealer.com, or you could just contact me directly at OppermanInvestigations@gmail.com. I have Radix Verum, who is working on a documentary film called Kidnap and Kill, an FBI terror plot. And you can check out her website at kandkfilm.com. And you go, there's like a GoFundMe trying to raise funds for this film here. So Radix Verum, Christina, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So before we get into the whole story here about Kidnap and Kill, an FBI terror plot, tell us about yourself. Who is Radix Verum?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an independent journalist, and I've been kind of covering things for a while, writing articles. I have the Substack. I have the YouTube channel. And right now, my main project is this documentary film about the Michigan Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping plot, as you say. So, yes.
Okay, then tell us, what is your Substack?
Right,
and yeah, what is your Substack, and where can we find your YouTube?
Oh, it's just Radix Verum. So it's radixverum.substack.com, and my YouTube channel is youtube.com/c/radixverum, I believe. And you can find a lot of stuff on the Whitmer case there, because I covered it as it went. So from the beginning, when the story broke in 2020, all the way through now, I've been covering it there.
2020 feels like 10 years ago, and that's
spelled
right. There's a new story every 5 minutes. Radix is spelled R-A-D-I-X, and Verum is V-E-R-U-M. And how often do you put up new content to YouTube?
Not that often. Right now, the documentary is taking up most of my time, so it's sporadic. Whenever I feel there's something to talk about and I have the time.
And I got you. And now, so a couple of years ago, 2020, we all turned on our TVs in the morning, and we saw Governor Whitmer. Is that who it is? Whitmore?
Yes.
And she's
Gretchen.
On, Gretchen, that's right. Governor Gretchen Whitmore from Michigan up there. And she's on TV, big smile on her face. Oh, my goodness, I was almost kidnapped. We watch her being interviewed, station after station after station, big smile on her face. And I'm saying, gee whiz, you know, if I just, there was a time in my life I was almost kidnapped. And I didn't have that same kind of reaction that Ms. Whitmore is having here. This is a very interesting story. Why don't you tell us what the official story is about this kidnap plot, and then we can get into what you've uncovered.
Yeah, so, like, the official story is that, you know, there was a militia group called the Wolverine Watchmen out of Michigan that were upset about Gretchen Whitmer's lockdown mandates, and they were in a militia group, and that they came up with this, you know, crazy terrorism plot to kidnap and possibly kill her. At different times, the government alleges different things, so at one point they say that you know, these guys were part of the Boogaloo movement, and that they wanted to ignite a civil war and all this other stuff. They alleged weapons of mass destruction that these guys had. And so there were 14 men that were arrested in total. This was in October of 2020. So this is 1 month before the presidential election, by the way. And they're arrested, and it's broken up into several cases, by the way. So there are six men that are charged federally, and then there are state cases where the other men are charged. Five in a case in Antrim County, three were charged in Traverse City. Those three went to trial. They were charged with providing, quote-unquote, material support for terrorism. And then the other five guys, they are going to trial this summer. So this case is still sort of ongoing. And there's a lot of different people, different players involved. But that's the government's narrative, is that this was a militia group. They were extremists. They didn't like the lockdowns. And so they were going to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer and possibly kill her. That's the quote-unquote official story.
And then, because I also, the minute I read the complaint, when the complaint came out, it was pretty obvious this was kind of like a ragtag group of Walter Mitty types, gang that couldn't shoot straight, meeting in the basement of a vacuum cleaner repair joint. It seems like everything that they word came out of their mouth was being recorded, despite their best.
Yeah.
It's just so sad. Despite their best efforts to take everybody's cell phones before leading them down into the basement, every single word was recorded with these guys.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just amazing, you know. And so, describe the quote unquote the plotter. So, what type of people were they?
Well, there's a ragtag group of people. The man who the government alleges was the ringleader of the plot is a man named Adam Fox. At the time that this occurred, he was homeless. He was living in the basement of the Vac Shack. This was a vacuum repair shop that belonged to a friend of his, and he basically was working for them. So he was working there, kind of staying in the basement of this shop. He had just gone through a divorce where he gave his ex-wife like basically everything. So this is why he was in this, you know, vulnerable position, I guess. He also had recently lost a grandmother, and he started dating a new woman. This woman was sort of a bad influence on him, I guess, and she kind of encouraged him to get involved and try to get into these different militia groups. She herself was part of some militia group, and she kind of encouraged this for him. But he has no violent history. He has zero criminal record prior to this. So you basically have just a very vulnerable person that didn't have any friends, didn't have a father figure, and was befriended by numerous FBI informants. That then tried to, you know, entrap and frame and radicalize him. Another man that was alleged to be sort of one of the ringleaders was a man named Barry Croft out of Delaware. Barry is a 40 or 50-year-old truck driver. He has three young daughters. He has a set of twins and then another daughter. So he was raising his daughters by himself. Their mother didn't really have anything to do with them. He had a fiance at the time who was helping him. Around this time period, she suffers a brain aneurysm and she goes into the hospital. She loses a large part of her memory. So he said that going through treatment with her was sort of like that experience. You know, the movie like 50s First Date?
Yeah.
With Drew Barrymore or something like that, right? So he's trying to help her. He's also in sort of like this vulnerable position at the time. But Barry, you know, what's his motivation to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer? He lives in Delaware, you know. So he was just a truck driver that, you know, got swept up in this. Brandon Caserta. Brandon was a machinist living in Michigan, working class guy that, you know, just showed up basically at the wrong place at the wrong time and had his life destroyed. There was a young man who was 24 years old that was a Marine veteran, and his government decided to try to entrap and frame him.
And I suppose this fellow worked his way to the top of this organization because he had access to the basement, right, where the meetings were taking place. Okay.
So it's interesting because the way this whole thing happened, I'll try to walk through it, and I think that for people to understand that inside the FBI, there is an incentive to artificially create these threats, right? That then the FBI can kind of swoop in and foil. If you recall, after 9/11, it was Islamic terrorism or whatever, you know, and the FBI would target kind of vulnerable people, people on the fringes of society, maybe people that had a history of mental illness, and then would try to entrap them and frame them for some kind of terrorism plot that they would foil, or in some cases, some of these actual so-called terror events, there's an informant involved or the person was previously known to the FBI, right? So that's sort of the background there. I know you mentioned Trevor Aronson, who wrote a book called The Terror Factory, which I think is, you know, fairly old. I think it's from 2011 at this point, but he's, you know, investigated a lot of these so-called terrorism cases, and he basically said that the FBI was like manufacturing a lot of these cases and using informants in elements of like agents provocateur and entrapment and things like that. So I think that's an important background for people to understand. Now, as far as this group goes, the government claims that they were all members of this militia group, right? That's how this was presented to us, as, oh, these guys that were dangerous, terrorists, whatever, the FBI foiled this plot, and this is what they were going to do. No, they were not all members of the Wolverine Watchmen. That's not true. Some people were just invited, like Brandon. He was never a member of the Wolverine Watchmen. He just got invited to attend one of their so-called field training exercises. And he did that in June of 2020. That was, I think, the first time he attended an FTX. And the FBI didn't even open an investigation into him until August of 2020. And then they arrested all of these guys in October. And they're in their own paperwork for why they opened an investigation into him. It was basically because of his political speech, political opinions, things that he said that they didn't like. There was nothing that showed any kind of like agreement to kidnap anybody. So what essentially happened is, you know, in March of 2020, the Wolverine Watchmen are infiltrated by an FBI informant named Dan Chappell. Dan claims that he had seen threats of violence against law enforcement that for whatever reason he didn't document, right? That's how he supposedly was made an informant right away. And you can look throughout here, you know, the different people, the different defendants in this case, they're targeted at different times for government surveillance. So the FBI was investigating Barry prior to their opening of their investigation into the militia group, the Wolverine Watchmen. Barry, again, lived in Delaware, not Michigan. He wasn't a member of this militia group. But the FBI sent informants to befriend him. Two of them, one of them was a convicted pedophile, by the way, career criminal, Steve Robeson, and another one, Jenny Plug, who was posing as the head of the Tennessee chapter of a fake militia group that was created by the FBI. And they start reaching out to him in January of 2020. So that's before March. That's before their so-called official investigation. And it's the FBI informants that introduce Barry to the Wolverine Watchmen group and say, hey, you should train with them. You should do some training with them. You know, it's not like this was a group that pre-existed and then the FBI came across a plot in motion. They took a bunch of people that they had begun surveilling online and then used 12 different informants, two undercover FBI agents, to bring people together and try to put them in the same place at the same time or whatever. You have to ask yourself, and even BuzzFeed said this, that without the FBI's involvement, like, some of these guys wouldn't even have met each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you mentioned, it might have been off the air, that the FBI actually created some of these Facebook groups where they met each other.
Yes, yes, exactly. So that came out at trial that the FBI has not only their informants, so confidential human sources, but they also have undercover, like FBI agents, whose job it is to kind of administer Facebook pages for fake militia groups that don't exist. One of the things that they did in this case, the man that they framed, the guy that was living, the homeless man living in the basement of the back shack, Adam Fox, who they framed as a quote-unquote ringleader, the man who has no criminal history, never been in jail before, no history of violence. They had their informants working him, calling him every single day, texting him, trying to push him to do things. But they told him they were inducting him into a militia group that didn't even exist. And then the FBI used that militia group to say, hey, he's a member of a militia. He's an extremist. So the FBI created a fake nationwide militia group called the Patriot 3%ers. Steve Robeson.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
One of the FBI informants, who was also a career criminal and pedophile, he was the one that basically was in charge of that. And he was posing as the head of the Wisconsin chapter of that group. Jenny Plunk, the other informant, she was posing as the head of the Tennessee chapter of that 3%er militia group. So they told Adam Fox that they were going to make him the head of the Michigan chapter of this fake militia group. And then they gave him business cards that he had displayed in the basement of the back shack when the FBI raided him. And then they used those business cards to try to, like, as evidence against him. And this is like what you see throughout the entire thing, where the FBI is kind of, through their informants and undercover agents, almost setting up like a theatrical production where they're kind of getting hapless people to show up for this here, and then they're filming them, or they're giving them business cards and then using that against them and saying, oh, see, look, he was a 3%er or whatever. Why is the FBI creating fake militia groups? Why are they administering Facebook pages? The FBI, by the way, created a Facebook page for Adam Fox, for the so-called Michigan chapter of the Patriot 3%ers. The FBI made that Facebook page and then gave it to him, and then they used it against him at trial as evidence. They did things like that. One of their informants, the convicted pedophile Steve Robeson, who, by the way, was kept off of the stand because the government didn't want him testifying, so his kind of role in this was concealed from the jury, but it's all throughout the discovery and things that were filed that the jury didn't get to see. But Steve Robeson is running around the country engaging in criminal activity. He's the one that calls that first meeting that they have where the government says the origins of the plot were first founded in Dublin, Ohio. They called it a nationwide meetup of militia groups. That's how the FBI presented it to the public, of, oh, these guys were really dangerous. You know, you had multiple militia groups that were meeting up. And there weren't multiple militia groups, really. It was all groups that the FBI had either infiltrated already or just completely made up out of whole cloth. So the FBI's informant shared that meeting, and they had at least five different informants all wearing recording devices at this one meeting. And then it's in the court documents. There was motions filed by the defense that have out-of-court admissions or out-of-court statements. These are things that were basically picked up on audio that these informants were wearing at these various meetings where they are it's the informants that are the ones encouraging violence and making suggestions like, oh, why don't we shoot some rounds in the governor's house? That was Dan Chappell, one of their informants, suggesting that. They tried to entrap a 70-year-old disabled Vietnam veteran named Frank Butler from Virginia into, kidnapping and killing Ralph Northam. Things like this. Yeah, this is what's happening. The FBI is creating fake militia groups. They're running Facebook pages. And they also are creating databases of Americans that they want to target for political reasons or whatever reason. And then they give their informants access to these databases.
Yeah, people can check out. I've done three interviews with Trevor Aronson about this very this case. We did at least one. And then these other scenarios, like you described, where the FBI creates the crime. They, sometimes these people would have no access to explosives or weapons unless,
right,
other than the FBI, either agents or informants. This whole informant system that we use in the United States, where, again, these confidential informants are out committing other crimes and getting away with them. And anytime they get pulled over, something, all they have to do is call in their handlers and stuff like that. They just get walked right out of these cases. Yeah, and they're seizing
money. And in this case, you've got more informants and undercover FBI agents than you do actual defendants. So more people working for the government than just regular people.
Yeah.
You know, it's bizarre and stunning. And this is, these informants were given envelopes of cash, by the way. Dan Chappell, one of the main informants, he was given $54,000 cash for about 6 or 7 months' work. For him, by the way, he worked as a truck driver, a contractor for USPS. He made around $50,000 a year. So in 6 to 7 months working for the FBI, he's getting paid envelopes of cash, and he's making what he makes in an entire year in half that time. Also, he gets a new laptop. They give him a smartwatch. They help him relocate and move to a new home and sell his old home. They say, oh, he has to do that for fear of his safety. They also, in December of 2020, give him a $23,000 cash bonus. As like, oh, good job entrapping and framing these guys. Here's your bonus for that. That's the incentives for these informants. You know, it's a kind of very sick system. You know, they are incentivized to help create these things, right? But the FBI supposedly admonishes their informants not to drive plots, not to suggest violence, not to take leadership positions in these groups. And this is exactly what they were doing.
Yeah.
So the exact opposite of what they say the rules are.
Yeah, and the idea that these are cash, so many often these are cash payments. We did a whole look into Lawrence Ray. He's in prison right now for human trafficking. So, but the guy was, has this intelligence background. He was best friends with Bernie Kerik, and here he's pimping out these girls, $8,000 a day. At one point, he was acting as an informant, getting cash payments. You got to look into that case. But also, too, the idea that some of this cash is not getting kicked back to the agents and the handlers that are recommending and paying. Obviously.
Right.
There's no way.
Well, that's a good question. And here's another thing. Why are these envelopes of cash, why are they coming in envelopes that say Chase Bank? One has to wonder what kind of bank account the FBI has at Chase, where they can just take out thousands of dollars in cash to give these informants. You know, where's that money coming from? How much is it? Is this taxpayer dollars, I presume? And, you know, it also brings up a good point about the incentive for these agents of these agencies to create this stuff. They get promoted when they get these big cases, right? When they do a big bust like this, especially one that gets splashed all over the news with Whitmer, as you said, doing her press conferences and stuff. And I encourage people to watch the trailer for my documentary, because it begins with not just Gretchen Whitmer, but Joe Biden also. Joe Biden compared these men to ISIS. And he and Kamala Harris were, you know, making those references, which is ironic if you consider, like, the U.S.'s role in the creation of, like, the Mujahideen that morphs into al-Qaeda and stuff like that. It's kind of like a funny allusion to, like, their own role in this. But anyways, it's just they have incentives for doing this. They get promoted. But you have, take for example, one of the lead agents in this case, a man named Jason Chambers. Jason Chambers, by the way, had previously worked the Boston Marathon bombing case back in 2014 that was on this case. He had created his own private intelligence company called Exa Intel. Now, Exa Intel was trying to get a multi-million dollar contract with the federal government to advise them on cases of domestic terrorism. And we have from Discovery emails from Jason Chambers that he was sending out trying to drum up business, touting his work for the FBI for why people should give him, you know, all this money for his private intelligence company. He had a Twitter account associated with Exa Intel that was tweeting about this case, the Michigan case, claiming to have foreknowledge. So he was quite literally trying to profit financially from this case for his private company. Now, that also could have been legal, because FBI agents aren't even supposed to be doing that without permission from an FBI supervisor. If they are, because it creates a conflict of interest. If they're going to create a private intelligence company that is for profit, they have to allow the FBI to know about this. Now, the defense lawyers inquired with the prosecutor Nils Kessler in this case about whether Jason Chambers had in fact sought permission from the FBI to open this private company, because if he hadn't, he may have broken the law. It was a violation of 18 U.S. code. I don't remember the section. I think it might have been, ironically, 1512. So it's kind of funny. But and there's no follow-up on that. The lawyers asked if they would investigate Mr. Chambers and what he was doing with this private company. And some of the things that came out in Discovery were emails that he'd been sending where he was talking about his private company, and he was trying to get contracts with state governments, security contracts, providing security for events, including political events. So if something happens, like a big DT or domestic terrorism thing, or a potential, someone was going to kidnap the governor of Michigan, maybe we should hire Exa Intel to start providing security for our events.
Wait, now you're saying, wait, you're saying that Chambers was running this private security company at the same time he was active duty FBI?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes, and I can even read you one of the emails that he was sending out trying to drum up business. This was in April of 2019. This was actually before he started working on the Whitmer case, which, by the way, he also said that we have this from text messages that came out. He texted another FBI agent and said, "I'm running this case as a TEI with or without approval." TEI is Terrorism Enterprise Investigation. It means he has to get permission from his own supervisory agent, and he said he was going to run it as a TEI whether he got permission or not. So clearly he had an interest in having a TEI case. They were calling it that before there was apparently any plot, according to the government. But this was an email he sent in April of 2019. And we don't know who he sent this to, because that is redacted, but it says, and I quote, "I trust that the negotiations with Louisiana and other states are proceeding well, In the interim, Shelley and I are daily planning and preparing for Exit Intel, that's his private company, to go live. I've also been preparing things at my office so that I can leave the Bureau and join Exit Intel full-time very soon after it is funded. I am currently the acting supervisory special agent of my squad, which has allowed me to reallocate resources such that my eventual exit will be relatively painless. What does he mean by that, reallocating FBI resources so that when he retires from the FBI and goes into the private sector with his private company, it will be relatively painless? And this woman, Shelley, that he talks about that is daily planning and preparing for his private company to go live, yeah, we found out that he was paying her as an FBI informant. He was giving her envelopes of cash to be a quote-unquote CHS, but he admits that she's working for him to get his private company to go live. So then the question is, was he giving her taxpayer dollars, paying her as a CHS for stuff she was actually doing for his private company? And is that what he meant by saying that he is currently the acting supervisory special agent of his squad, and that allowed him to reallocate FBI resources? Is that what he meant?
Yeah, I got you. See, now, if Chambers was going to run this Exit Intel after his retirement and he was still, you know, there's a little blurred time there, that wouldn't be that unusual. As a matter of fact, all the old organized crime cases we used to work on, I was a defense investigator back in New York City back in the 80s, and all those cases, the ex-FBI agents who were prosecuting and arresting these organized crime figures later on went to work for the defense, like seamless, you know.
Yeah, but this is at the same time, though. I mean, during 2019, it is questionable. And then for his private company to be tweeting about having foreknowledge about that case, it suggests that, yes, indeed, he was seeking to profit financially from that.
Yeah, and also, he felt
at
untouchable.
Least in my opinion.
He felt he was untouchable, in doing
correct.
This.
Correct.
Now, how does Radix Verum get involved in all this? Who are you talking to? Are you involved with the defendants? Do you speak to any of the FBI agents, the prosecutors?
Yes, so I've been following the case and researching it on my own, and I have interviewed multiple defendants in this case, including one of the men that was acquitted and found completely innocent. You know, I started interviewing him, getting his story, and then I thought, well, no one's really telling this story. You know, there's this misconception out there about what happened, and there's an injustice currently happening right now with these men who have been framed. So I've also interviewed the two guys that the FBI kind of called the ringleaders while they were in jail. I conducted jailhouse interviews with them for my documentary. And that my interviews with one of those men were cited at his sentencing hearing by the prosecutor, Nils Kessler. And I think it was quite possibly retaliatory. And then they sent both of those men to Supermax, so I can no longer communicate with them. Yeah, after I got them to provide statements that they would like to get to the weaponization committee to investigate what the government did in their case. I had them write statements. I had Barry speak his, and I published it. And right after that, the next day, those men were moved to Supermax, and now the communication with them is very tightly controlled. They get one 15-minute phone call per month. They have, you know, a rubber pencil, a three-inch-long rubber pencil that they're allowed to write letters to, but their letters go through screening and can be redacted. My replies can have to go through screening and can be redacted. So they're controlling communication now with these guys. But prior to that, they weren't. I was able to interview them while they were at Nuevo County numerous times, video interview as well as telephone calls. They were able to call me pretty much whenever they wanted, as long as they had the money in their commissary to make those calls, because each 15-minute phone call is $5. For people who aren't aware of the scam of the prison industrial complex, yeah, and the financial burden on family members of people who are incarcerated, it is insane. I had to learn how to navigate that system to get into communication with these men, to interview them for my documentary and to get their stories, and to begin trying to independently verify their stories and interview other witnesses that were there, things that, you know, journalists are supposed to do, but for whatever reason weren't really interested in doing.
Now, my audience is very familiar with the whole J-Pay system, and we've interviewed people while they were in prison.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Reverend Pinckney, while he was serving a sentence, he got in trouble for it, as a matter of fact.
Really? Oh, yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah. Well,
I believe they moved these men to Supermax specifically to prevent their further participation in the documentary. I can tell you that. And not only did I interview them, I interviewed all of their cellmates, and I heard all of their stories, and they all had, interestingly enough, very similar sounding stories of people being set up, people being framed, you know, but they're small people that no one cares about. They didn't have a story that was, you know, national news and presented by the government as the biggest domestic terrorism case in a generation, which to me, if you're going to make that allegation, you better have the evidence to back it up. And there simply wasn't any evidence of a plot in this case. There was evidence of the government trying continuously to instigate one, but it just never happened. And then towards the end, they got so desperate, they decided to just create what they called the ride-along, the night trip surveillance to the governor's house, all planned by the FBI, you know, and set up because they were running out of time. There's text messages between their informants to the handling agent, Jason Chambers. 5 months into their investigation, he says, these guys have no plan, and I'm sort of wondering if you're wasting my time in a sense. And then the FBI says, you know, oh, well, you know, do this, do that, try to bring this person along, you know, invite that person. And so when they come to the so-called night surveillance, the night ride along, I've heard a very different story than what the government alleged. And it's ridiculous. What I was told, and I think that the evidence shows this, is that the FBI installed what they call a pool cam at Gretchen Whitmer's vacation cottage. So a pool cam has like real-time video feed going into the FBI. I think it also had some kind of like, what is it, like night vision on it, right? So the FBI plans this night ride-along, and there's more FBI than actual defendants in the vehicle. And they have these guys kind of drive down the street of her cottage, and they say, oh, they were doing recon, right? They wanted to drive by her house to kind of like case the place. That's the narrative that was presented. But when I interviewed Barry, he said that he was told they were doing land navigation training. So people should understand that Dan Chappell, the government's one of their lead informants, he became basically the leader of the Wolverine Watchmen militia group. He became the XO, which is basically, and he even admits this, he was their ops guy. He starts taking over the training of the group, their defensive training and firearms training, and he starts making it more militant and militarized. And the government sets up and hosts what they call FTXs. That stands for field training exercises that they would invite these people to. The FTXs were all put on and paid for by the government, and they literally set it up like you were, like you would if you were setting up like a theatrical movie. You know, I say that they set up obstacle courses for these guys, and then they film them kind of running through the obstacle course with like their plate carriers on and their big guns. And then the government just kind of played that at trial and said, oh, look, you know, look how scary they are. These guys were actually going to do something, and so you should convict them. There was nothing that showed them actually planning a quote-unquote kidnapping, like taking actual steps in furtherance of a crime. You know, if you're going to plan to kidnap somebody, like, you'd expect to see, for example, communication between the co-defendants. If they're conspiring with each other, there's, like, no phone calls. The only calls are between the FBI's informants and these people. You know what I'm saying?
What about the plan to blow up that bridge? Because who came up with that idea? Because I actually looked up the bridge. I Googled the bridge. It would be a huge operation. Like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to blow up that bridge.
So,
man.
First of all, that bridge is not, by the way, the only bridge that goes to that location. It wouldn't even have done that. So the government came up with this narrative, right? This is where the WMD charges come in from the superseding indictment, where they say these guys were trying to blow up this bridge. And the government claims they were going to do that to slow police response, right, or to slow law enforcement response.
Which you could pull off with a car accident on the bridge. You could pull a car accident on the bridge and pull that off.
Right, well... Yeah. So exactly, not only that, but there's another bridge, though, that they could just go take the other bridge. Right. People that are familiar with the area, I was interviewing them and asking them about that, and they're like, no, that area, like, that's not the only bridge, so this doesn't even make sense, first of all. Second of all, what they did there, so I just told you that for the so-called night recon, these guys didn't even know what they were getting involved in. Barry was told they're doing land navigation training. So that's what he thinks he's doing. He gets in the car. There's an undercover FBI agent and an informant in the front seat. And the undercover FBI agent, it goes by UCE Red. His real name is FBI Special Agent Timothy Bates. But he says to the informant, like, he knew something was wrong almost. That's at least how it sounds. He says to him, like, kind of something like, hey, do these guys know where they're going? And Barry says, and this is picked up on the wire, he says destination unknown. Barry admits he doesn't know where he's going. He was told they were doing land navigation training. He doesn't know that the FBI is going to drive him by Whitmer's cottage to try to pick them up on that poll cam so they could have some kind of evidence to try to show, hey, look, they really were planning to kidnap her, because they had nothing and they knew it. And they were getting down to the election, and that was their timeline. They wanted to arrest these guys prior to that. So the FBI keeps trying to kind of, you know, they stitch this group together. They drive them around for various excursions. They're getting them drunk. They're getting them stoned. They're taking them out for hot wings. The FBI is offering them $5,000 credit cards because they're like, we've got to get some kind of evidence on these guys, right? Let's offer them credit cards, because these guys are broke. They're working class men from, you know, Michigan. They don't have money, but if we give them these credit cards, maybe we can get them to make like a large purchase of ammunition, or we can get something that we can use, right? So they offer the homeless man, the guy who's living in the basement of the vac shack, oh, hey, you can use this credit card to buy gear, they say. This is the informant. He goes, oh, I have this from my charity that I run, and, you know, it's got $5,000 on it, but you can feel free to use this for gear. And the homeless man turns it down. So at that point, the FBI is getting very concerned that they don't have anything on these guys. And so they introduce this undercover FBI agent, UCE Red, who poses as an explosives expert. And they have this guy show a video that the FBI themselves actually made. They actually produced a video of an SUV being blown up. and they have this undercover FBI agent show this video to these guys, allegedly, and then offer them C4. And so these guys, and it's very, very bizarre, after that ride-along, right, that I was telling you about, that the FBI sat up the night recon, when they were on their way back from that, the informant, Dan, says to Adam Fox, hey, why don't you go get out and pose under the bridge with your guns? Like, so there's a picture of Adam, and this was used against him, standing under the bridge, like, with a gun in his hand with this big dorky smile on his face. That's, like, the bridge, you know, what they were saying, that these guys were going to try to buy explosives to blow up or something.
But it was Timothy Bates who had the idea to blow up the bridge.
Yeah, Timothy Bates, UCE Red, he was the one posing as the explosives expert that told them, showed them this YouTube video of an SUV exploding, and he said, hey, I can get you the explosives that could do something like this. And then, you know, the FBI lured these guys to get arrested, and they told them they were going to get free gear, but they actually were bringing them to meet up with this guy, Red, and they were saying, trying to get these guys to put down a down payment to buy explosives, which none of them did. But that was basically what the government alleged that was going to happen. Oh, they were going to give him money. They were going to try to buy explosives from him, but nobody did.
Okay,
just to be clear,
Red is an FBI agent.
He may also have been involved in a story I think Trevor just reported on with a Denver BLM activist.
Right, yeah.
Trying to entrap one of those guys. It may be the same FBI agent. He also went by Red, and he has a similar description as Red. So it may be the same undercover FBI agent, Special Agent Timothy Bates. Yeah, that may be involved in, again, doing the same type of thing, just to a different group.
Yeah, and, you know, I got to tell you, you know, these guys, they retire, they write books. I've had many of them on the show. You know, you're talking to them, and then you're talking to them off the air, and they tell you, oh, yeah, and my brother had a case with 200 kilos where he got caught. Oh, but they dropped the charges. You know, so there's a whole world going on with these guys, right? Now, but
yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's a whole other world. And, you know, they're all involved in these Stinger missiles. Oh, yeah, you know, stop this Russian Stinger missile. Yeah, same thing over and over. Now, there's a whole bunch of guys who are doing time for this right now, though, right?
Yes,
16 years, 20 years, 4 years, 10, 12 to 20, 7
absolutely.
To 20.
Yeah. So Adam and Barry, and this is tragic, by the way. I just want to touch on how this went to trial. So I do believe that the government didn't expect this to go to trial. I think they assumed these guys would take plea deals, because a lot of them do. And we never get to the discovery phase where we get to see the evidence of, like, the FBI's actual involvement with this. We go through the first trial. Two of them, I think, are kind of coerced into taking plea deals. And then the other four go to trial. Two of those men are acquitted, Brandon Caserta and Daniel Harris. The jury finds that the FBI tried to basically entrap and frame them, but they weren't even entrapped because they didn't do a crime. They weren't entrapped into committing a crime. No crime actually occurred. The government just tried to make it look like they did. It's like framing somebody. I don't even know if you could say entrapment for Brandon and Daniel. So those two were acquitted, but the jury couldn't come to a decision about Adam and Barry. So they declared a mistrial, and then the government retried Adam and Barry separately, and they were convicted. And in the retrial, there were a lot of allegations of misconduct. They're actually going to appeals right now to the Sixth Circuit, so that's coming up. But the issues there, so the judge imposed what they call, he created this bogus hearsay rule. So any evidence that was exculpatory to the defendants, the jury wasn't allowed to hear about. They weren't allowed to hear about the misconduct of the three lead handling agents that the government kept off the stand. Jason Chambers with his private intelligence company. Special Agent Henrik Impala, accused of perjury in a prior case by a U.S. attorney who basically said that this man is corrupt. That was supposed to be investigated. And then Richard Trask, the FBI agent who wrote the criminal complaint, he gets arrested for attending for beating his wife after they attended a swingers party in Kalamazoo. So this FBI agent, he takes his wife home, and he bashes her head into the nightstand numerous times, and he tries to strangle her. I've seen the body cam footage from the police. I saw the blood in her sheets. This is the FBI agent who signed off on the criminal complaint. He was fired.
We only got about 5 minutes left. So let me ask you a question. And what about Radix Verum? Have you, because when you start dealing with the federal government, I had a case involving the U.S. Secret Service, and my mail was getting broken into, all kind of stuff, like, you know, right in front of my face, you know, ripping packages open. Just no attempt to hide it. Have you received any kind of repercussions from investigating this and exposing it?
So I think the people who have experienced the most repercussions are Adam and Barry, who were moved to Supermax. Yeah. They sent Adam to Florence Supermax and Barry to Terre Haute. And so I think that that's been tragic. They've been unable to really talk to their families now at this point. But I did, I was swatted two times in a three-day period. The first time I was swatted, I was premiering a video about how the government was trying to shut down my documentary by moving these guys into Supermax and preventing our communication. As that video was premiering, I was swatted, and I was swatted again at 4:30 in the morning. So I don't know if that's related or not. It's just kind of weird. I've never had that happen to me before. And I know also, and I've been told this because Barry put me as as the person he wanted all of his court documents to go to, all of his stuff that he had while he was in prison. You know, anybody that is in communication with these guys is basically under surveillance. Yeah, that's so. I presume I am.
I would guarantee that. Also, you mentioned a couple of times that they were moved to Supermax. Anytime you're moving somebody, whether it's to Supermax or just another prison 8 hours away, and they put you on these private buses, these privately owned buses, and they're moving you 8 hours away, 6 hours away, 4 hours away. Anytime you're being moved, when you're leaving, even within the prison, when you're being moved, you're leaving your quad there, your pod. You owe people money. People owe you money. These are the most dangerous times to be of your time in prison, when you're about to be moved or you're moving to a new place. This is the highest risk time of doing time. So
that's right. And then to put them in Supermax, like Adam is now cellmates with a murderer, you know, right now, as he's in the SHU in Florence. And so that's what they do. Yeah, exactly. It's very scary, very disturbing when they do these moves. And clearly it was retaliatory. They'd been at Nuevo County. They were able to do phone calls, video visits, letters. It was only until they, you know, started talking about how the government framed them and set them up that they go, oh, we ought to move them now. By the way, mid-appeal. And their appeals lawyers have been kept from speaking to them. Just now I heard that Adam finally was able to speak to his appeals lawyer. But the appeals certain things have to be done in a timely manner. And to prevent communication like that is outrageous. You know, the appeals lawyers, I have letters from them from March saying that they're trying to contact these guys, trying to get a visit with them, and they're getting the runaround from the prisons.
Yeah, and
it's ridiculous.
And they're really not that concerned about convictions. You know, they get the big headlines, they get promotions for this stuff. Like you said, this guy's using it for his personal gain with this exit intel. You know, so the idea of, you know, well, these cases got to be perfect, we'll get convictions. You really don't need that. You know, there's a lot of money. And by the way, that cash comes from seizures. When they're stopping people on the highway driving from Florida to New York City or to, you know, up north, when they got $10,000 cash, they can't explain it. All that money goes.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know, to these other forfeitures.
Right? Yeah. And didn't the FBI seize like a bunch of people's safety deposit boxes with like millions of dollars in it? They just kept everything? They kept it all?
Oh, yeah. And on the other hand, too, the U.S. had one of those anonymous safe deposit places in Vegas. And the guy who owned it would rob the place. But no one can say.
Oh, my God.
You can't say anything because you know where the cash come from. What are you going to tell them? So that's just rife for abuse here. We've been talking to Radix Verum. You can find her on YouTube. Kidnap and Kill, an FBI terror plot. And to find the fundraising website is kandkfilm.com. Radix, keep us updated on this, okay? And as the film progresses, if you want to come back and fill us up with more, you're welcome back.
Will do. Thank you. I appreciate it.
No, thank you. Good night.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.